Okay, this is the second part of our series of interviews with Nelly Marasco, and she's going to describe the truly heroic story of her parents and how they sheltered Jewish families during the Second World War. But in this second section, Nelly, I want to talk about the beginning of the storm. Mm-hmm. You had mentioned in the last interview there were intimations on the radio that you heard that Hitler's speeches and tirades, and then you saw that he invaded Poland and right. then he invaded Holland. So what are your recollections or memories when this started to become touch home for you in Belgium, in Antwerp, and you know, a sense of that this wasn't just a radio broadcast. This was something that was actually going to change your life potentially forever.
Oh yes.
So what are your earliest recollections of what happened?
Well, we heard all this, the Germans invading. Then finally, we heard that they were invading Belgium also.
Yes.
And then, of course, we were anxious to hear, you know, how far they were getting.
And where did they begin? Where did they come in from?
Well, they came in from the south.
From the south?
From the south, they came in, mm-hmm. and they were advancing, and of course, people were afraid.
Was there resistance?
And they were leaving.
Was there military resistance?
The what?
Was there military resistance? Did the Belgians attempt to defend the country?
Belgium really didn't have much of an army.
Mm.
So they were trying to push the Germans back, but you know, they couldn't because the Germans were so big, the army.
Right, that, powerful.
They squashed the Belgian army right away, you know, because it was so small.
Right.
And, of course, everybody was leaving. Mm. People were making their luggage and everything, and they were going away, you know, trying to go to France.
Right.
Thinking that France would be a better place to go. And my father, his sisters, they were living not far from where we're living in Brussels. And he went there and asked their opinion, what they wanted to do. And they had decided, let's all get together and leave, evacuate.
Mm.
So my father came to our house and told my mother that the family had decided they would all get together and evacuate Brussels and go to France somewhere.
Where would you have gone in France?
Nowhere.
No one knew.
People didn't know where they were going. They were just leaving.
I see.
And so my mother, she says, well, if you want to go with your sisters, she says, you go. But if it is my time to die, she says, I want to die here in Brussels.
Amazing.
Not somewhere on a road with thousands and thousands of evacuate that people don't even know where they are going.
Wow.
So, of course, then he went back to the sisters and said, she doesn't want to go. Hmm. So nobody went. So they all stayed in Brussels.
What was your mother's first name?
Melanie.
Melanie. And your father's first name was what?
John.
Yeah. So that was really pretty, in a way, courageous of her that she put her foot down and said.
Oh yes.
I see.
She was very stoic.
Interesting.
Very stoic.
So what happened then? So you the word is coming. They're invading. The Belgian army is putting up a weak resistance.
So then, anyhow, there was my mother's sister, who lived in our house on the second floor. And her daughter had married somebody who had a restaurant in the city. And they had said, well, let's all go there because they were bombing Brussels.
Oh, my.
And
you could hear the bombs?
Oh, yes.
Were they near your house?
Well, you could hear the sound.
You could hear the sound.
So you don't know when they were going to bomb your house or next door or whatever.
It must have been absolutely terrifying.
Oh, it was. So anyway, we went to that restaurant, and there they had, on the second floor, they had a billiard
table, yes.
room. you know, when people could go and play billiard. And they said, well, sleep under the tables, the billiard tables. It's some kind of a protection.
Yes.
So we all slept underneath the billiard tables. So early in the morning.
Excuse me, was this in the spring or the winter?
It was like in May.
In May?
Yes.
Well, that's fortunate.
And, you know, people would constantly ring the doorbell downstairs and they wanted to come there. So some people, they knew very well, they let them in. But we slept under the billiard tables.
Amazing.
So early in the morning, you know, we get up, we open the door, Germans all over the place.
Germans. In the street?
All over.
It's like they came in the night.
Yes, exactly. Wow. And, you know, of course, we didn't know what to do. We stayed there, then my father said, well, might as well go back home if we still have a home, you know. Mm. So we walked, and, you know, they...
How did you get home? By a cab or by a bus? How did you get home from the building?
Walk.
Oh, you just walked?
We walked.
And he couldn't walk very well either, right, your father?
Oh, well, he could walk.
Oh, I see.
With a limp.
With a limp, I
you
see.
Know. And the Germans, they were trying to impress the Belgian people, and they were like all a troop, and they were marching, you know, real
tough.
And you know, I said, oh my God, I said, look at that. And my father said, don't pay attention, don't look at them.
Wow.
You know, just keep walking.
Wow.
So anyway, so we came home. And then while we were home, they had across the street, there was like it used to be a railroad station, but then it was sold to a big department store, and they used to store everything there. And from what hearsay, that the ones who were watching there, the guards, they had opened the doors and said to people, take anything you want, because the German are going to requisition everything.
Yes.
So there were people all over the place.
Amazing. Well,
God, what's going on here? And so my father, you know, because we had in the back, we had cheese. You know, we had Swiss cheese, which are the big...
Huge Swiss cheeses, yeah.
Yes.
Stanley's pointing
and
showing
with their
hand. And
my father said, if they try to get in here, you know, he says, he had a club. He said, the first one who tries to get in here, he says, I hit him with the club.
Thank God.
So anyway, they didn't do that. But then somebody must have dropped a cigarette or something, and the whole place started burning.
This is the department store.
That was used, the warehouse of the department store. The whole place, which was like about five blocks long, was on fire.
My God.
So, of course, you know, they said, where are the firemen? The firemen had left. There were no more firemen. There was an old farm, you know, an old man that used to have a truck, a fire truck. And he came and he said, I need help. You know, I'm by myself here. So my father was the only one who volunteered. He says, give me a hose.
Okay.
He says, you know, and I'll help you. But what he did, he was hosing our house because all the windows were busted from the heat of the fire.
Oh.
So, and it was five blocks long. With one hose, you couldn't do anything, you know. Well, anyway, he was hosing our house.
I see.
But all the windows were busted. So anyway, that's all.
So where are you in all of this? Are you watching this from the street? Are you watching it from your home?
Well, I was in the house.
And is everybody frantic, or are you really quite
People
calm?
People were frantic.
They were frantic.
So anyhow, because we had neighbors, but on the good side, the neighbors, you know, and he said, he went in there, he says, and I just took a box. He says, I didn't even know what it was. When he came home, they were all, what do you call it? You know, men, when you're going to have sex and you have protection.
Condoms.
Condoms. It was a whole box of condoms. So we were laughing, you know, and they said, that's what you got, a box of condoms.
That's really terrific. Terrific. So meanwhile, outside, the Germans are marching back and forth. They're in their jeeps, their
They're cars. All over the place. And officers, you know, they were taking the officers.
Right.
Taking over and all that. Because what they were doing also, they were hiring, sending to all the young people a paper that they had to go to Germany to work in the ammunition
factories. Yes.
And I had gotten my paper too. I had to go.
Oh, women as well, young women as well.
Oh, the young women.
Oh, I see.
Because, see, the ones who were working in the ammunition factories, they were Germans. They didn't want, when the Allies were bombing, they don't want the Germans to die, but they wanted the ones, what, the young people from the...
So you got a letter, how was it? It delivered, or was it in the mail, or how did it work?
It was delivered.
By a German?
It was delivered.
It was delivered, I see.
And within 24 hours, I had to present myself to know where to go to Germany.
My God.
And my mother said, you're not going. She took the paper and ripped it up and ignored it. Well, 24 hours later, I got another paper, and it said, you better come, because if you don't come within so many hours, we are going to come and pick you up, and if you are not there, we take a member of your family. So I said to my mother, I said, I gotta go, Mom. You know, they're gonna come and get me anyway. She says, you're not going. She ripped it up. She says, let them come. And that night, the underground had gone to the offices where all the records were of the German, you know, that they had of the people, and they had put fire to it. So all the records were destroyed. So I never got my paper.
So now, at this point, you mentioned the underground as though it was completely unrelated to your family. At this point, was your father a part or your of the underground, or is that later?
He didn't know. My father, as he was retired, he used to sometimes stop at a cafe and have a drink there and talk with the people there, you know. And they knew each other very well. So there were people from the underground and talked to my father if he wanted to help.
I see. Now, did that underground in... excuse me, in Holland, or in Belgium, did that begin before the Nazis invaded, or was it the Germans invaded, or was it...
The German.
When was it formed? Immediately upon the invasion, or even before, was there an underground beginning to form?
The underground was beginning to form right away.
Right away.
Yes.
I see.
Yes.
It was an extraordinary... story in itself of valor, of great valor, that the Belgian people, notwithstanding they had very little, as you say, a trained army, resisted, and they resisted through the, and that they were able, they had the courage to destroy the records, as you say, because otherwise they would have rounded you up and you wouldn't be telling this story today.
That's right, because I had a girlfriend and she had to go to Germany.
Do you remember her name?
No, I don't remember her name.
But you see her clearly in your memory now.
Oh, yes.
What was she?
Yes.
Tell us what she looked like.
What was her name? Her name.
What is what she looked
Angela.
Like?
Her name was Angela. Angela.
Isn't that something? Was she your age?
Yes.
About what was
it? We went to school together.
16, 15, something like that?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And she had to go. But she got the papers.
What does she look like? Give us a picture of what she looked like, if you can remember what she...
How could I say?
She was blonde.
I mean, I have pictures of her.
It's okay, but she had blonde hair.
She was Italian.
Italian.
Yes.
Nice. Isn't that interesting?
Yes, she was Italian.
Family was Italian, and you were close friends.
Oh yes.
What did you do together? You bicycled together.
We did everything together. We went out together. You know, she came to my house. I went to her house. Oh. You know. Oh yes, we were very close.
That's something.
Yes.
And you must have, so she must have been absolutely frightened to death to be grabbed and just sent off to Germany. Right? She must have been terrified about this.
Oh, yes, of course, because she was there. And then when she was working in ammunition camp, and afterwards, you know, when the Germans were, they were running away, you know, and they abandoned everything.
Right.
And she was left there. She didn't know how to come back home.
But she did eventually?
Oh, yes.
Isn't that lovely? Well, yes. So there's a good ending of that story, at least.
Yes. Yeah.
So it sounds like pandemonium. It sounds like
absolute
pandemonium that the records are. But I guess did you take some level of comfort that they said the records are burned up? So you had a, did you know then they wouldn't come get you, or were you worried that they would come get you?
No, because we heard heard from the underground.
So not worry about that at least. Isn't that something?
And my mother said, "You see, I told you, you're not going."
Isn't that something else?
Yes.
So then the Germans sort of established their base.
Oh, yes.
And was there a central headquarters with a Nazi flag and so forth?
Oh, yes.
So what was it like just sort of living under that occupation? Could you go to school still? Did you go about your life?
We still went to school. But then what happened one day... is the Allies would bomb, you know, such certain strategic
areas,
and the school I went to, at the end of the street there was a railroad, and the Allies had bombed. They wanted to bomb the railroad because they wanted to stop the movement of troops.
Right. And supplies.
So, but the bomb fell on the school.
Oh, were you your school?
No, I wasn't in the school, because when you heard the alert,
the alarms, yeah,
you know, you stayed home.
But it was your school.
Oh yes, it was my school.
Oh my God!
So my school was completely destroyed, and the nuns were killed and everything else. And across the street from the school was also a girlfriend of mine that went to that school. And of course, when the bomb fell, it doesn't go on one spot. It destroys everything all around.
Yes.
And it destroyed the house where my girlfriend was. But my girlfriend was over my house.
Oh.
And when the alarm went off, you know, she says, "Well, I better go home." I said, "Well, I'll walk with you." It was like about a half hour walk. So we are walking, and as we're coming close to the school, and the street was barricaded, and we saw people running, bleeding, you know, and like crazy. And people from the Red Cross and all that, they were picking up these people, put them in an ambulance, and take them away. And then suddenly she couldn't go into her street because it was barred. They said, "No, you can't go there, because everything is destroyed." She said, "But I live there." Well, he says, "Well, you don't live there anymore."
Wow.
And her mother and her sisters were in the house, and they were killed when the bomb.
This is your girlfriend.
Yeah, but my girlfriend was over my house.
But she must have been hysterical.
Of course she was. But her father, he used to work further in the city, so he was alive. You know, she says, "Well, I better go to my father." So she left.
My God. So when you, in terms of the average day, you get up, you have your whatever, a cup of coffee, a croissant at your house, you come out, you leave the front door, and then on the street, the Germans all walking along the street with jeeps and...
They're all over the
place. Today, you're a young girl, you're a pretty young girl. Do they ever wink at you or kind of, you know, try to say hello to you?
Just ignore them, you know, just keep walking.
So did they say, you know, "Hey, pretty girl, can I talk to you? Do you want a cigarette?" Did they say stuff like
No,
that?
No, you just
kept mind your own business.
Mind your own business.
And so you tried to lead a completely separate life.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Was there any, apart from what we'll get into in the next interview, was there any exchange at all? You have to ask directions. Some roads are blocked. You have to say, "Can I get Did you have any interactions with any of them?
Well, I wanted to cross the street one time, and there's this German, like a German Jeep, stops in front of me, you know, and I says, oh my God, now what he wants, you know? And he wanted the directions. He wanted to go certain places, you know. He said, which way do I go?
Speaks in German or speaks in...
No, he spoke like...
Flemish.
Flemish. And, I said, yes. Well, you go this way. Keep going. But I gave him the wrong direction.
See, it's a little bit of resistance there. Good for you. it's really quite extraordinary. And there you go. Would you eat out or would you eat in at home mainly?
The what?
Would you go to eat in restaurants or would you mainly?
Oh no, you don't go and eat in restaurants.
Because they're all in the restaurants.
Because and not only that, you know, everything was restricted, and the city would give you a sheet with numbers on there. And that was for the food, for shoes, for clothing, for everything. Of course, you have to pay, but you have to give the coupons.
Well, how did life function under German rule? I mean, you're beginning to tell me this, but I mean, just in the most basic thing, did the water supply of your house work? Could you drink the water? In your house, the water was okay.
Oh, yes,
so
yes.
The toilets functioned, continued.
Oh, yes.
Okay. So then, if you needed food, you'd get a kind of ration ticket.
Right.
You'd get coupons, and then they control the whole food supply.
Right.
So where would you go to do shopping? Where would you go accompany your mother on shopping?
My mother never went out. My father and I, and we had to go and stand in line for food. So for bread, they said, well, there's the baker, you know.
Yes.
He has bread. Okay. So I would go and stand in line of people looking for a loaf of bread. And my father would go and stand in line somewhere else in another bakery.
I see. What about, what would you eat? What would be the main food you would eat? You'd have meat and potatoes or salad or what?
Whatever is available.
Oh, so you didn't decide on your menu. They decided what's available, and you.
Right.
I see. So,
because then it got so scarce with food, because you were standing in line, and when you get close to the door, the baker would come out and he said, "Sorry, people," he says, "I don't have any more bread." So that was the end of that.
So were you hungry? I mean,
of course.
So there were some meals you couldn't, you didn't have enough food to eat.
Well, you could buy things at the black market.
How did that function?
Well, you knew somebody that was selling food at the black market. So my father would go there, you know, and see what was available. Like for one egg, you would pay $5.
I see.
You know, things like that. So my father, he decided he was going to buy a farm.
Wow.
So when out somebody, you know, whoever talked to him, outside of Brussels, and he bought a farm. But of course, he's not a farmer. He couldn't work the farm or anything. So he had to hire people to work the farm.
And you didn't need permission from the German authorities to buy?
Well, that had nothing to do with them.
So they didn't know about it and they didn't care about it.
No, it had nothing to do with them. So then we had food.
That was smart. Yeah.
We had vegetables.
Did you live at all on the farm, or the farm was outside of?
Well, the farm was empty.
I see.
So my father would stay at the farm.
I see.
Because during the night, people would come, and in the fields and steal things, so he had to hire men with a rifle, and patrol the farm that they wouldn't come and steal whatever they could get.
But imagine that other families that may not have been as, you know, it sounds like you were of modest means, but you were at least, you know, you had money, some money. But some families may not have been so lucky. Maybe they were really hungry during the war, right? They didn't have the means or the know-how to... But were there families that starved, or did more or less everybody make it through in terms of...
Well, somehow people make it through.
Make it through.
Yes.
I see. So now, of course, what's happening at the same time in Germany is the Jewish stores. You know, they have Juden on the stores. They break the glass. They take the Jews out of the stores. They sent them to the concentration camps. Right. Is that starting to happen now in your town? So there were Jewish stores.
Yes.
Did they immediately upon the Germans coming, those stores closed down?
Well, what happened? These people that lived in our house, the man had a butcher store, and he had machinery there, you know, and he says, well, I know they're going to come and close my store and take us.
Do you remember the name of the store?
Oh, no.
No. The Jewish name?
I don't know.
Don't know. Okay.
No, that's too funny.
But there was a Jewish family, a Jewish
that was
proprietor.
A Jewish family, yeah, that lived in our house.
I see.
So he said, can I store my machinery in your place, in the back house?
Yes.
And so my father said, yes, of course.
I see.
So he had brought all the machinery and put it there in front of that hole.
That you had described, yes.
The one that I described. Yeah. So there was an empty space with a piece of linoleum, and all around was this machinery from the butcher store.
Amazing. And so that was taken out of then they closed the butcher store probably.
Oh, yes.
Pretty cool.
Yes.
So was it evident when you would go down the street, say you take a walk or you go with your friends and so forth, and you'd pass what used to be a Jewish store, it's all boarded up, is that what it's like? And nothing's happening there. How quickly did that all happen? Almost immediately? How quickly did that happen after the Germans arrived?
Well, as soon as the Germans were there, right away he closed his store.
I see. And was there a lot of sort of martial music? Were there drums, sirens playing music?
No.
Patriotic music?
No.
Did the sound change in Antwerp?
No.
It was the same as it was. If somebody didn't know Antwerp, it would look as though it's sort of a city, except it's occupied by Germans. Flags everywhere or no?
Oh, yes.
I see.
Whatever was occupied by the Germans, the flag was there.
I see. And so what was your daily feeling? Is it a kind of, I could imagine if I placed myself in a situation like that, it's very hard for me to imagine emotionally what it's like to live under that kind of a occupation. Of course, yours was a Catholic family, but did you feel in your gut a feeling of anxiety all the time, were you able to just affect a change, in the beginning I'm talking about, that you just sort of, well, the Germans are now here, I'll go on with my life. It's inconvenient, but, or was it a sense of heightened anxiety and fear that you felt?
That's the way it was.
You felt all immediately?
Oh, yeah, because you didn't know what was happening.
So it was uncertainty. You never knew.
Because another thing, my father, as he was retired, but he was bored, being home all the time, so he would take a walk, and when he sees a grocery store, he automatically would go in the grocery store and start talking about that he had a business, a cheese business, and he said, if you need any cheese or anything, he says, I can get it for you. And then people would say, yes, I'd like to have this and that, because there were some cheeses that you didn't need a coupon for. So he says, I'll get the cheese for you. So I would walk with my father, and at a certain moment, we had to cross a river, and there was a bridge there. And as we are coming and we were going home, they were the Belgians. They were putting, on the bridge, to blow up the bridge.
Oh, dynamiting the bridge?
Exactly, dynamiting the bridge. So we said, we live across the street on the other side of the river. And that were the English, because the English had come, the troops, and they were trying to help,
yes,
you know, the Belgians. And they said, well, you want to cross on the beam, you know, the beams, they already had taken apart the rest of the bridge.
But the Germans hadn't seen this.
No, the Germans weren't there yet.
Oh, I see.
And so my father says, well, here we go. Hold on to me, and I hold on to you.
Oh, this is before the Germans had entered.
Yes.
You shifted the time a little bit.
Yes.
I see.
So I'm holding on to my father. You know, both of us, we hold on, and we are walking across the beams, you know, and that's how we got across the river.
And then they blew up the bridge?
And then they blew up the bridge afterwards. Mm-hmm. We heard that they had dynamite it, and they lit it. Because they didn't want the Germans to come, you know, go from one place to another.
Yes. But how did you deal when you think of all the psychiatric problems that people have in crowded cities around the world? Stress is so rampant. Your kind of stress was a very different kind of stress. Here, you never knew whether you would be sent off to a munitions camp, whether they'd be crashing down the door. You really didn't know whether your life would be in peril at any moment.
Well, you don't know what was happening.
How did you possibly manage that psychologically? What did you tell yourself? I mean, of course, you're a young girl.
That's it. You know, when you're a young girl, you depend on your parents.
Yeah.
Whatever they decide to do, that's the way it is.
But you sound like both of them were really quite extraordinary, emotionally extraordinary people. Your mother sounds enormously courageous. That she took care of your father, who has, if not an invalid, certainly had challenged, and she really stood up very early to them. And your father, of course, is really a kind of combination of courageous and very generous person. And I guess they gave you a sense of inspiration and steadiness.
Yes.
So that you didn't panic yourself. I guess you felt, well, if they're not panicking, I don't need to panic.
Right.
It's amazing. Where did your mother get her strength from? What was it? Religion? Was it?
That was her character.
It was her character.
She was always like that.
As long as you knew her, and it sounds a combination of courageous, and matter of fact, practical person, and your father as well. Were they religious, your parents?
Well, yes and no.
They went to the church going?
Yes.
Uh-huh. But it wasn't, you don't think it was the driving force that gave them, it wasn't their faith that brought them through, it was their character.
It was their character.
Isn't that interesting?
That was their character.
I see.
Especially my mother. I mean, my father also, but my mother, I'm telling you, she was so stoic. When she said no, it is no. Mm-hmm. There's no in between. It's no.
I see. And did they have, was the part of it a sense of the a right and wrong, a sense of the injustice of this, or was it just... It's sort of at some level, and a willingness. You say, use the word stoic, a willingness to accept death if it has to come, and bring it on. It's kind of that sort of attitude.
Yes.
Bring it on. If I have to die now, I have to die now.
That's right.
Boom. Yeah. Well, it's quite amazing. It's to be able to know the roots of that, to understand what kind of. Did she get it from her parents, do you think? Was it in the Cohen and Nas tradition, or is they were fighters, or is this is the unique nature of your parents?
It is, because she always told me during the First World War, she had a sister who lived in a different part of Belgium, and that sister had gone very sick, and she wanted to go to that sister and help. But you couldn't travel the way you want to travel because the First World War, you know, when the Germans were there, you had to get a permit. So she went to the place, the office, where to get a permit, and were Germans, of course. And so she said, she remembers, she told me, she said there was this officer riding on his, you know, in the office there, was busy. And I walk in and he looked, because she didn't knock on the door, she just walked in. So he looked at her and he says, "Who are you?" He says, "What is, je suis Belge." Just like see, that.
Yeah.
Je suis Belge.
Yeah, I'm Belgian, yeah.
Right. And like, she also wasn't afraid.
Right.
You know, and then she said, "I have my sister in such and such an area, and she's very ill, right, and I want to go and help her.
I see.
And I want a permit."
Yeah.
So they gave her a permit for so many days.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah. Well, that's really wonderful, Nelly. I mean, it's I think you've portrayed the situation really very distinctly. And one gets a sense of what it was like and the courage that your family and you displayed, which really sets the scene for the next story where you began to your first encounters with Jewish families. But that will be the next story. So we'll adjourn and stop at this point right now.
Everything's ready.
Okay, just a second. I don't know how to stop it.